Membership update, everybody. It's June 15th. I told you to mark your calendars. Well, the website is ready, but registration begins the 17th. I'm such a tease. I'm sorry. It's coming Monday. You can sign up Monday. MyGrowPass.com is built, and we are accepting registration June 17th. Just a couple of days, everybody. We will be releasing an episode detailing all the great stuff you'll get. So stay tuned for that. Again, June 17th, you can sign up. Everything's ready to go. We're just preparing for launch, everybody. All right, without further ado, enjoy today's episode of GrowCast. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. We have Wolfman back on the line. What's up, Wolfman?
Oh, not much, man. How you doing?
Excellent, man. Excellent. Back from Vegas.
Awesome.
Dropping this GrowPass program. You know I'm excited about that.
Super awesome.
Hell yeah, man. Before we get started, please share GrowCast with a friend and give us a rating or review. Make sure you're subscribed. Do all those things. They just take a second, and we really appreciate it. Oh man, what's going on, Wolfman? You're managing a shop. You're being a badass cannabis retail fucking manager, hustler, killing it out there. What's going on in your professional life?
Just trying to just keep every day going, keep the store going.
Is it really busy right now? Everyone's getting set up.
I mean, yeah, springtime's always busy. Yeah, it's everybody going crazy. A lot of hemp. But yeah, things are good. Things are almost starting to slow down a little bit, but you know, it's just, you know, peaks and valleys, or I don't know, Let's say rolling hills, you know, when the sun is shining, make hay, or however that old saying goes.
Yeah. 100%. Well, what are people buying? You said there's a lot of hemp going on. What's flying off the shelves?
Lots of propagation stuff. Rooters, lots of, I don't know, silica, lots of shade cloth right now because it's super hot. But yeah, just the basic propagation stuff. Soil amendments, all that good stuff.
Nice.
All the mostly springtime items, but just a little more volume because it's not just the weed growers anymore. It's a little bit of everything.
That's right. I walked into a hydro store for some Mammoth pea. I wanted to try out the mammoth pea on my herb garden. Unfortunately, they were closed on a Monday, so I walked up looking like an idiot pulling on the door. No way are they closed on Monday. But
it's weird. That's like tattoo hours.
But I'm sure you get a lot of different people interested in these products now. It's like, I heard this works well on cannabis. I would like to use it for my tomatoes, please.
No, mammoth peas, they make some good stuff, and I've been seeing emails about they've got a new like pesticide.
Yeah, microbial biocontrol, I believe it's called. And we're actually giving away some of that to our GrowPass members for the contest. So make sure mygrowpass.com registration begins in 2 days, June 17th. But yeah, that biocontrol, have you heard good things? Fucking, I had Colin Bell on, and that guy is just, I'm such a huge fan of that guy, dude. He's so smart.
To be honest, I don't know as much as I should. I'm very interested in learning more. I just haven't had the time to do the research, is trying to keep up to speed with everything else.
Keep your head above water. Anyone listening who uses it, please send us your results. I would love to hear from you guys. I love hearing from you guys about anything. Let's see. What do we got? Vegas. Vegas was fun. Me and Jay Smooth took a trip to Vegas. We played less poker than we wanted to. We only played two tournaments. One of them was a World Series of Poker tournament. I finished 8 players outside of the money. Sounds better than it was. It was a pretty small field, but I was proud of my play. Got to smoke up on the strip. Recreational bud is out there. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good quality. Definitely. There's a little bit of an organic bud push, it looks like. I saw a couple advertisements, which I like.
That's cool.
I think that's probably going to be a big selling point going forward. I think just if you look at the trend in the States in general, everything is going towards sustainable, organic, you know, environmental friendly. So I think that's shown a little bit of a push in Vegas. I was happy to see that. And also happy to see that you can just pretty much vape weed in the casinos, which was really, really fun.
Crazy.
I mean, no one stopped me. Everyone was smoking cigarettes. And so when we just had a break from the poker room, I just walked over and started ripping the pen. No one bothered me.
No, I've done that in casinos before, but I don't know. I think Reno's a little different than Vegas, but I haven't been down to Vegas in quite a long time.
Yeah, everybody's watching in Vegas. That's the one thing that really weirds me out, is how many cameras, like everybody, you can just feel the eyeballs on you.
Oh, yeah. the moment you get into the parking lot, you are, Big Brother is watching, always Tag watching, always it. Judging. Look at the baby, look at the baby.
It's a weird place to get high too, because the whole city has this like fake feel to it. I like to say that everything kind of faces the strip. It's almost like a movie set. Like if you were to walk up to the side of it and like push on it, it would just fall over like one big, you know, the back of a movie set, a big flat plywood. If you're off the strip and you're looking, it's like you're looking at the back of a movie set. It's like everything's all shitty and yeah. like desert. But if you're forward facing, if you're in the middle of the strip, it's like, oh, glitz and glamour. Everything's also fake. We walked by, we were on a corner. We were walking by the corner of Reno Avenue and Las Vegas Boulevard on the strip. And we round this rock. It had to have been 5 feet long, like a boulder, and like 3.5 feet high. And we round the rock and we see in the back is smashed out and it's just a hollow fake rock. They just put this fake rock here. And Jay's like, what's up with the palm trees? I'm like, dude, palm trees don't grow in the desert. They put these here. Everything here has been fucking transported and slapped in and watered heavily to keep alive in the middle of this fucking asphalt wasteland that they've created. It's a very strange place to get high, but it was enjoyable nonetheless.
Oh yeah.
So,
Silly Vegas.
It was a good time all around. And I look forward to more.
Yeah, as long as you had a good time, that's the name of the game.
Totally. Totally. You got to take it for what it is. Go to Vegas with all that in mind, and we'll keep you up to date. I'll give you guys a little more of a heads up next time. Let the fans know where we're going to be and stuff so we can hang out, smoke up, do some fun stuff with you guys. But today's episode, let's talk growing, man. Let's talk yield. We've done an episode on yield before. We've touched on yield many, many times. But I wanted to approach it from kind of a different standpoint. You know, people are taking care of their plants outdoors right now. Maybe they're getting ready for an indoor run. I want to talk about kind of the stuff you can prepare for yield, preparing for a good yield. You know what I mean? Making sure you got all your ducks in a row, setting yourself up for a good yield. So let's talk about kind of the foresight in planning, properly planning a good yield. Does that sound good, Wolfman?
Sure. Yeah.
The first thing that jumps to mind, I mean, it's a new topic. We would have never discussed this on the show 3 years ago. Strain selection, ever important. You got to know what kind of plant you're growing and to expect, you know, what kind of yield. If you got your big, thick indica buds, you're going to have more dry bud weight. And the reason I phrase it like that is a lot of people are now growing for extracts, man. If you, yeah. you got to decide, we don't have to, but it's a good idea to decide before you start your harvest, before you even pick the pot you're going to grow. You got to decide, what is this going to end up as? Is this going to be in distillate? Is this going to be a wax? Am I just going to sell this as dry bud? Those all have huge implications, right?
Yeah. Or if you know, you want to grow something for just CBD, it's more of a, even just a medical thing.
Totally. So totally. Then,
yeah. Yeah. Different percentages of different, of the different THCs or the different CBD aspects of it is all very good factors in strain selection.
Do yourself a favor. Before you get started, look at your grow room, look at your grow space, look at the ceiling. Look at the ceiling. If you have a low ceiling, do not pick a stretchy strain. Wolfman, you battled with that several times, right?
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I've always picked small, weird, low ceiling or even like angled ceiling rooms to grow in. And yeah, I remember I ended up with, I think we called it trash, Trainwreck Afghani hash plant, and it just got really tall. So it definitely, I mean, the stretchy strains, you can either like trellis them down or just keep them short. But I mean, certain plants want to hit a certain size to maximize their yield and their production than just their maturity yeah. or I don't think maturity is the right word.
It's, but their, it's their genetic potential. They're trying to realize their genetic potential, man.
Yeah. 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 Like I wouldn't do like, you know, like Blue Dream or something super stretchy, like in a small space, or if I've got a low ceiling with a, you know, like a Gavita going or something, if I don't have an AC and whatnot, cause you just, you know, you're looking for trouble. You're setting yourself up for more problems and potential failure.
Yeah. And you're going to fuck up your canopy is going to be uneven and there can be all sorts of different stuff, but it's interesting because stretchy strains kind of have a new benefit. Talking to Danny Danko, he said those are really desirable for extract purposes because the terpene production and the cannabinoid production on the surface area of the bud, on the outside surface area, apparently, you know, does really well when it's being extracted or whatever. which is very interesting to me. So you can have less of a weight, but a greater surface area because of long, skinny, maybe like segmented-ish buds. But if they're covered in crystals and terpenes, then that's going to be good for the extraction purposes. Do you agree with his estimation?
That sounds like a very,
makes sense,
a very
to me.
Good, very good. I want to say hypothesis, but that's not really, it's been proven. So I'd say a very good thought.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I agree with that completely.
So yeah, that's not something that I would have said 4 years ago, you know, ooh, stretchy strain. Let me jump at that. You know, that's actually a new reason you may. Yeah. It's fascinating stuff, man.
Strain selection, you know,
ever important.
Yeah. Yeah. It just boils back down to what you're going to be doing with the product or the end result, the end flower when you're done.
Mm-hmm. Intention is key. Segues nicely into the next point. Big plants versus small plants. And this is something that I would love to talk to you about as far as the outdoor growers who are outdoor now and are going to be thinking about this, in the future. I'd have to imagine the way that you prune plants, you know, topping plants, bottoming plants, shaving legs, as you love to say, it's got to change depending on the size of your plant, right? Now, I only grew in a sea of green. I had 3 gallon pots. Training my plants was pretty dang simple. You know, you just get as many tops as you can. You don't want the crap on the bottom. You end up with, you know, 3 to 5, maybe 6 really great tops on this little, you know, plant in 3 gallon pot. If you're growing a big ass tree outside, how does that differ? Do you leave more of the lower growth on? Do you hollow out the center? What if you got a big ass tree? What about all that center material? How does pruning differ small plants to big plants?
There's a bunch of different ways to do it, but for me, I treat it more or less the same, but it also depends on genetics and the strain. And, you know, some will have a bunch of little lollipop stuff on the inside that's just not going to turn into anything. Where others, they naturally will just have big colas at the ends of the branches or at the top. Mm. So it all depends. I mean, outdoor, the natural sunlight, or even in a greenhouse situation, a natural light is going to will penetrate deeper into the canopy and in the plant. But in the same respect, you want to take, you know, some of those big lower leaves or open up the inside so you get more ventilation for bugs and other things. And, you know, with bigger plants, you still run the risk of molds and mildews, especially outside, or especially if you're just full sun where you can get rain or mist or dew or all of that stuff. It's more or less the same, but you don't have to be as on it with outdoor plants, especially if you're going full season, because you can just let them get a lot bigger. And then, you know, just watch the plant itself. The plant is going to tell you or what it should or what it should and shouldn't have,
mm-hmm.
as the way for like bud sites or extra branches and whatnot.
Yeah, got to listen to your plants for sure. What about supporting? If you got a huge outdoor plant, do they sell bamboo stakes that are 20 feet long? Like what is that? What does that look like?
I've seen 12s. I don't think I've seen 20s. In that respect, I'd probably.
But they got to go in the ground too. So you're subtracting a little bit from the bottom.
Oh yeah, you're definitely gonna lose a little bit. I know a lot of people will use like trellis to wrap the outside, like in a ring around your plants. If you stake up some, you know, like some big, some big sticks of bamboo or
kind of like a tomato cage.
Yeah. It's like make your own tomato cage I think there's a tomato cage called like the big Texas tomato cage, which I think is like a good 2 to 3 feet in diameter. And then you can like add more levels to that as your plant gets bigger. Or if you're in a greenhouse situation, you can run wire across the pole or across your ribs, in essence, and then just run little hooks and support wires down to the plant plant branches and whatnot, and that'll help support them that way as well. And then I've even known people take like plastic wrapped fencing material, or I wouldn't say hog wire because I know that gets a little thicker and that doesn't really bend, but like a no climb fence with big enough holes that the branches and the buds can get through and you can still get your arms through. I know people do that. Depending on how big your plant is, I've known people to do 2 or 3 rings going out from the center. So it just all depends. Every plant is different. It's going to have different demands for support and structure.
That's right. Oh, what a segue Wolfman set me up for today's sponsor, the Atlas Plant Trainer. Every plant does have its specific training needs, doesn't it, Wolfman? That's why,
yes, sir.
That's why you need the Atlas Plant Trainer. It's the best plant support system on the market. If you guys are looking to grow biggest, hashtag grow biggest, that is, this is the best way to do it. There is no better way to do it. If it fits into your grow, this will up your game. Okay, go to atlasplanttrainer.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you savings. GrowPass members who can begin registration in 2 days here will get additional savings, so keep an eye out for that. But check it out now, atlasplanttrainer.com. They're customizable stakes. They interlock, they swivel, they do everything you need. It's basically an erector set for your cannabis plant. It builds as your cannabis plant grows, and it provides the perfect support system. Better than trellises, hands down. Better than stakes, hands down. When you're ready to elevate your game, atlasplanttrainer.com. Get a couple extra sets. You will not be disappointed. Promo code GROWCAST, atlasplanttrainer.com. What else we got here? Pruning early and often. Yeah, I think that people are probably, I say this a lot, I know I may sound like a broken record at times. I think people are scared to clip at their plants because they don't want to hurt them. Do you find that people don't prune enough? They don't prune early enough. Oftentimes they don't take off enough matter when they're doing the bottoming, when they're shaving those legs. Do you find that's a common mistake, or is that just something that I'm seeing?
I mean, I wouldn't in essence call it a mistake, but you know, since everybody has a different growing style, mm-hmm. But in my opinion, I'm a little more heavy, but it takes a little while to find that comfortable level of taking too much or taking too little.
True.
And again, every variety is going to be different, but I mean, that's one of the things that I see when I go into different people's rooms, or you know helping people, or even my rooms, where you just don't take off enough, or you don't like pick enough leaves, so you just have, you know, just, it's just a jungle. It's just a dark day or dark, just overcrowded jungle in there. So you end up having, you know, less light getting to the bottom flowers. So you have smaller yields, smaller flowers, smaller nugs, all of that stuff. So yeah, I think that a lot of people could probably take more off their plants. But then again, like different stages in a plant's life, I have different pruning techniques and styles and tricks to, at least in my mind, help me not end up with powdery mildew or bud rot or creating open sores to open up to other diseases and problems.
Yeah, you're inviting that in. Why don't you talk about that for a little bit? I think what you're getting at right there is specifically when you're pruning leaves, when you're clipping any sort of fan leaves, you don't like to take it from the stalk. As the listeners know, you like to, if you imagine that the leaf is your hand, you like to cut it off at the wrist and leave that forearm, if you will, sticking out from the stalk, just so there's not an open sore there, like you said, inviting who knows what, molds, diseases.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, I mean, when you're picking leaves off of like closer to your flowers or even in your flowers, like especially later in its growing or in its flowering cycle, I would, you know, take it at the wrist and then the forearm, as you put it. You know, it dries like a scab and it will naturally fall off. But you also want to, you know, pay attention to those, because that can, in essence, you know, create its own problems. But I feel that you'll have less of a chance of getting disease or rot and molds that way than just taking it right at the base of the flower, or right at the, you know, at the elbow of the,
yeah, that stalk intersection.
Stalk site.
It's kind of like, yeah, you're stabbing your plant. I imagine it would take some of the life energy of the plant to recover, whereas that energy could be better spent, you know, producing more terpenes and bigger buds.
Yeah, but then again, on the flip side of that, if, you know, it's the big water leaves and there's no actual, you know, flower material around, you know, it's like the bottom of a big branch or something, I'll take those, you know, at the elbow, if you will, because it doesn't really, there's no real, it's going to get a bunch of air to pass by it and it will heal fairly quickly. Whereas, you know, up in the flowers, it's a case by case basis.
Denser foliage there. You think that it's just more of a trouble area that you want to be more cognizant of.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the lower on the plant, if it's, you know, it's open, or if you, or like it's lower on the branch and there's, you know, just one of the big water leaves or something, those I'll take, I'll pop those right off. And, you know, depending on where on the plant itself, I'll pop them right off at the elbow. But, in certain instances or certain circumstances, especially later in the flowering cycle, I will just, you know, take the wrist, or sometimes I'll even pick like just one leaf or two leaves here and there, just like, so just take a finger or two, or like snip the knuckles, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Snip the tip. So
that is a good move. I don't like it, 'cause like you said, you don't want to ever take too much from the plant, and have it. There are some defoliation strategies out there that you people can look into, of like taking off all the fan leaves, but you don't ever want to do that all at once. That's for sure. Point being, if you want to get rid of those blockers, but you don't really want to take away the foliage, snipping those fingertips, so that it lets light hit the bud under it that's being blocked or whatever. It's an interesting little halfway point between, okay, you still have your water leaf if you need to store a little extra water or whatever, but, you can't be blocking this guy out. So I'm going to go ahead and snip your fingertips. Underutilized, I would say.
Yeah.
Got to grab those little guys if you're going to snip them, though. Don't just let them fall on your floor and start to rot and stink. And that's how you attract the bugs, right?
Yeah, you know, bugs, mold, mildews, all that stuff. You know, if you're, yeah, you don't want to just like let them fall into your flowers or into your canopy, and just they'll get funky in there. So you definitely want to, you know, take a bucket with you, fill up your bucket, make sure you get that bucket out of the room. If you got a compost pile, you know, you can compost them, or just throw it in your green waste, or, you know, do something, but don't let them just decompose sitting in the corner of your room. They'll turn into an oozy brownish black funky
insect
liquid
buffet. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just not good for anybody. You shouldn't be breathing that in. Your plants don't want to be breathing that in, and you're just attracting bugs and molds and whatnot.
Yeah. What if you just tossed a turd in the corner of your bedroom and then just kind of left it there? You know what I mean? That wouldn't be good.
Yeah. No. I mean, you know, it takes all kinds. Everybody's different, but I would not want to take a turd or like drop a deuce in the corner of my bedroom and just leave it there.
Sorry for that visual, everybody. But yes, it's basically a one-to-one comparison. All right. That's why I get paid the big bucks to paint these pictures. but moving on, super cropping, something that that's a hard segue right there. That's a left turn. Super cropping is something that I never really employed on a, you know, major basis, just because I had so many plants and I didn't really work it into my routine as much as I probably could have. Do you like super cropping? When do you like to see it? When do you think it's too late to be doing that sort of thing? Can you just tell the listeners a little bit about, well, first of all, let's explain what it is. You know, when you, we've talked about this before, you pinch that stem and you get that little pop, that outer herd pop. A lot of people use that squeezing technique as a strengthening technique, 'cause it'll grow back stronger, bigger, much like a human bone that breaks. It always grows back stronger, or, you know, in a healthy human, grows back stronger. Talk to me about super cropping, Wolfman.
I think you more or less hit it on the head. I have the same basic, experiences when, you know, when you have a larger garden, or you have more plants, or you just don't have the time to put into it. I stopped doing it more or less. And then when you trellis, you know, you're allowing the trellis to take the brunt, so your plants don't have to use as much energy to hold themselves up. When you super crop, you can't, you know, in essence, you're making the stems or stalks stronger so that they can support bigger flowers and whatnot. But yeah, when I, you know, a couple plants here and there, or if I'm like topping, sometimes when I take the top and I'll mess with just that crux where there's the next branches down, and that'll make that just a big knotty, like you said, big, like when you know, you break a bone, you'll get a little bit more calcium deposit, just gets thicker and stronger. So a lot of times I'll do that, like when I top things, and just make that branch, or that I make that intersection, you know, just that much more stronger, and those branches will get that much bigger, and you'll be able to push more energy, and the plant will be able to push more, you know, food and energy and just more goodness throughout the plant from that space.
My understanding is that it's good to super crop once your desired number of tops are reached, and once you've done a good job topping. Does that seem to be the best time to super crop? Is there ever, should you not be doing it super late because it's kind of inconsequential and kind of taking away plant energy, like you said?
I mean, when I did it, mostly it was in like my vegetative state, or like early flower, but in essence, you know, it's Yeah, just like you want to, like I always shave legs early because that's taking those extra little tangent or those extra little side shoots off, and you're allowing the plant to put more energy into, you know, the flowers and all that
stuff
production.
That matters, yeah.
Yeah, so I would do it earlier than later, but I think it's, you know, like you like with when you trellis and when you train and you like, you know, you make that candelabra, you know, of your plant. If you do it early enough and you just, you know, maintain it in the beginning and just slowly build on it all, you know, as over its, you know, its growing cycle, it should be, I would do it over, yeah, over time. I wouldn't just do it all at once because then the plant is going to, you know, it's
just
got
break
that
off
shock.
Its knee. Yeah, just break off its joints really quick. Like, here, toughen up, son of a bitch.
Yeah, so it's gonna, yeah, it's gonna take a lot more time to get out of that and then back into growth or flower.
Yep, great stuff as usual. Before we wrap it up, Wolfman, your specialty. Let's talk products. Let's talk Mammoth Microbes. I want to touch on these guys again. First of all, they're giving away a bunch of their Mammoth Pea product and their biocontrol, Mammoth Pea grinders, and even some Mammoth Pea hats. The highly coveted Mammoth Microbes hats. Giving that away to our GrowPass members. So I'm super excited about that. But I've heard such great things. And then I interviewed this guy, Colin Bell, and he talks about the power of microbes when it comes to not just organic growing, but the relationship between these synthetic nutrients and the soil food web. Everybody should be using this product, man. It boosts yield like crazy. I mean, they're giving us stuff to give away, but I'm not plugging them just because they're partnered with us. In fact, I don't believe they're offering discounts to our vendors. I'm plugging them because it seems like everybody could be using this product. These beneficial microbes really have no downside, and they increase the health of the plant. It's a good buffer between all of the nutrients in the soil and the plant itself. And it's just better at uptake both ways. It modulates uptake. Have you heard good things about Mammoth Pea? Just talk to me about what you've heard about Mammoth microbes in general.
I mean, Mammoth is a good one. Lots of people use it. It's not flying off the shelves as much as it did before in the past, but it is springtime, so it's definitely picking up.
Is it expensive? Is it an expensive product?
I don't remember price point off the top of my head, but I know it's up there. But I mean, microbes, I mean, you pay for what you get. I do know people that'll buy, you know, a couple 5 gallons every month or two, and they're definitely going through it. So, you know, people that use it love it. The people that don't know about it should at least try it, and then they'll probably love it and start using more and more of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know microbes are great. They help break down stuff. Just helps keep your plant healthier. You're building a better defense system for the plant to just stay healthier, you know, by itself through nature. It helps break down, you know, the salts and make it a lot more easily uptakeable. I'm a big fan of microbes.
Really cool stuff. And you guys who are listening, I've got a couple different people writing in, talking to me about my other podcast, the Coffee Health and Science podcast. I had Chris Trump, who was on this show. He's an organic farmer. He's a microbe-based farmer, not a cannabis farmer. He is a macadamia farmer in Hawaii, and he increased his profits at his farm by switching to organic microbe-based farming protocol.
Nice.
And we had such a good time on GrowCast that I actually had him on the coffee show, and we talked about testing organic plant tissue matter for different deficiencies and how if there's a deficiency in the soil, the tissue comes back deficient except for when there's a robust microbial life, and how this agricultural lab had to add special asterisks and notes because of his farm and his microbial processes. It was really fascinating stuff. So you can Google Coffee Health and Science podcast and listen to that. But really just blew my mind as far as like, that's why there was a bumper crop when we first switched to synthetic, is because there was still so much rich microbial life. I guess what I'm saying is it really does go well with organic and synthetic and synganic growers. Really pumped on Mammoth and everything microbes right now. But what else do we like? Let's talk about, let's rehash some really quick. Rock Resonator, we talk about that a lot. That product just, what is it exactly designed to do? It just increases your yield like crazy, right? And increases resin production.
Yeah, I mean, it'll like make things a lot denser and brings up more resinous production. Some varieties I remember chatting with people will use it for certain varieties versus others. So if you have like a more like a stretchier, like a sour variety, I know people that didn't really like using the rock for that, but they use it more for like their, you know, their OGs and their Kushes, smaller, denser flowers.
Oh, interesting.
Do a better, like, at least this is what people told me. They
seems to amplify the effects.
Yeah, they saw better results with their OGs instead of like their sours. And for their sours, I think they were doing like, oh, what was it, like Terpinator and products in that realm. But yeah, just more terpene production, more crystals, denser, harder, bigger flowers. Just a great, great additive. You definitely do get what you pay for. That you usually the more expensive items are a cleaner or a higher quality input. But that is also skewed because some products are just overpriced for what they are. So it all depends. Yeah, there's definitely things I've used over the years that I like better than others because of what they do and also for price point. But again, like we always say, it's all about personal preference. What works for you might not work for me, and vice versa. So if you've got something that really that you really like and works great for you and you're happy on all aspects of it, keep going. You know, if it's not broke, why try to fix it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wolfman always says the best teacher is you and your plants. And I stand by that advice 100%. Mammoth P, loving it. Rock Resonator, loving it. Heavy Fire, Heavy 16. You professed one of your more preferred nutrient lines if you were, you know, picking out brands you like. Heavy Fire, again, an expensive product, but that stuff works, man.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's one of my, you know, one of my preferred flower enhancers, flower or, you know, bloom boosters, if you will. I probably wouldn't use it. Yeah, I probably wouldn't use it if I was, you know, doing like three or four big greenhouses. You know, it's more of like an indoor thing. But over the years, I did know a bunch of outdoor guys or greenhouse guys that would buy multiple 6-gallon jugs of it, you know, through the course of their flowering season outside. So, you know, it all depends on what you want to do. And if, you know, if you're happy with your results and if you have that budget to add those slightly more expensive products in. But the biggest thing that I really like about the Heavy Fire is it is, I believe, one of the only products that has colloidal clay in it. And colloidal clay will widen the pH uptake range of phosphorus because that's the hardest one for your plants to uptake and digest because it is such a narrow pH range. And that's why, you know, we try to keep our pH around 6.2-ish. Just makes it that much easier for your plants to get what they need when they need it.
I love that. Colloidal clay, widening the pH uptake range of phosphorus. Loving it. Loving the tips. How about anything new hitting the shelves, Wolfman? Bloom enhancers or otherwise? Have you seen any new products that you want to share with the listeners?
I think it's a little early in the season for bloom enhancers and whatnot. I've been seeing a lot of, I don't know, since it's more springtime, more propagation, it's been a lot more like compost castings, propagation stuff. I don't know. I've been pretty stoked on Terravesco compost recently. It's like a worm casting, but mixed with a compost. It's just gonna make your, you know, plants do amazing things. You can add it to any kind of plant. You can top dress with it. You can mix it in. I think they're based in Sonoma County down in California. Nice. But yeah, good solid company. Super nice, friendly people that work there. High quality product. I fully stand behind that one. But yeah, not too many bloom things yet. Give the season a little bit of time to go a little bit further. I think depths will first round of depths should probably kind of start coming down in the next month or two. So people will, you know, start getting into feed mode / bloom mode then, or, you know, I would imagine in the fall, getting closer to harvest time, we will, have many more, bloom enhancers to talk about.
Nice. Yeah. Interested in that Terravesco product as well. Interesting combination. Get the worm castings and the compost together. I'll have to reach out to those guys and talk to them. Great stuff, man. This was fantastic. Thank you, as usual, for taking the time to do it.
Oh, my pleasure. Good little Saturday.
I got like a graveyard of roaches. That's why there were so many light ups during this episode. It's because I'm moving from one roach to the next. I've been working so hard that I can't even hit the dispensary and pay overpriced prices for weed.
Yeah.
What does it come to in 2019? Life is so hard.
Right. Yeah. I don't get out of work until after all the dispensaries are closed. So I just haven't had a chance to go get anything. Luckily coworkers have taken pity upon me and kicked me down a little bit of weed. Cause yeah.
Good man.
The girly smoked all my weed while she was here.
Oh, brutal. That's a brutal one. Well, man, we appreciate you taking the time. You're working 12-hour days, and then on the weekends, you're talking to the listeners. So we appreciate it, man. Seriously. We look forward to having you back on as soon as possible.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back and share the random things that are in my brain with the good listeners out there and out there in the world.
Hell yeah, man. They love it. We love it. Everybody out there, growcastpodcast.com, mygrowpass.com, registration beginning June 17th. That's right. Just a couple of days. So excited. At Growcast on Instagram. Make sure to follow us. We're always posting all sorts of cool stuff. This is Wolfman and Jordan River. We're signing off and wishing all you growers a happy grow and saying to you,
stay safe out there, people.
And grow smarter.
I would not want to take a turd or like drop a deuce in the corner of my bedroom and just leave it there.